Welcome back, friends. We're here with another episode of Culture Cryptids. And of course, this is the second part of a two-part series that you lucky folks have probably just listened to the first episode, because these were released simultaneously. I almost said another word that was incorrect, because I do that a lot. But here we are.
What word was it?
Well, I've been like following some court cases, and it's one of those like when you have like the subsequently and then simultaneously. And I was like, no, these released at the same time, simultaneously.
Get out of here with your big words and your college degree.
Rude. You mean the college degrees that I don't use?
I'm so sorry.
Oh, as I pointed out, like I spent a lot of money to talk about monster fucking on a podcast. So here we go. That's right. We're back. And I am one of your hosts, Corey, the certified Mothman sugar baby. And with me today is...
Well, I'm JD. I'm your other co-host. And my turn-ons are long walks on the beach, picnics in the park, and getting boinked by a wolfman.
And yes, that is in your Grindr profile? No, we had a conversation before where I couldn't remember what all the dating apps are and which one was the gay one. But then I was informed that there are multiple gay ones. So
there are more. There are probably more that I don't know about. And I use none of them. I am a good boy. I'm not kink shaming anyone, but
listen, if you want people to call you a good boy, that's between you and them. I don't need to know about it.
I'm usually the one calling people good boys.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. I get that. Well, speaking of sex. Hey, JD.
Hey, Corey.
When did you start thinking about monster fucking?
Oh, I really do think, the root of all of
this. I knew you were going to use the word root. I knew it was happening.
I think the root of it for, like, all of it for me is, it all goes back to Disney's Robin Hood. And I think, like, after that, it's Disney again, but it's the, it might be in Fantasia, the big, like, kind of monster thing with, like, the horns and all of that. I think that's in, like, the Sorcerer's Apprentice part of it.
You mean Chernabog?
Yes.
You mean Chernabog from Fantasia?
Yes.
Yeah. Chernabog, I get it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. That is a god, a dark god.
Tall,
not evil.
Dark, handsome,
powerful. Quiet,
powerful. Yeah. Doesn't talk a lot. I love all those things.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
How about you?
Oh gosh. So this should surprise nobody. I think honestly, like I'm gonna say Robin Hood is not a monster. He's a fox. So that is your furry root.
But it's all tied. It's all tied together.
The non-human aspect, I understand. For me, it's probably going to go with, okay, this is so cliche, but Beauty and the Beast, but TV show from the 80s.
Oh my God.
Did you ever watch that show?
Oh my God. That beast fucks.
Yeah. His name is Vincent. Thank you very much. And he's played by Ron Perlman, which is also probably explains a lot about my deep and unabiding love of Ron Perlman. But yes, Vincent from the Beauty and the Beast TV show from the 80s, where he romances Linda Hamilton because she is the female lead in that show.
I remember watching a bunch of that on WGN.
Yeah.
Yeah, growing up.
I watched a lot of it growing up, like on reruns, and I was very into it because she's like a DA and like he lives in the sewer and has this big lair. So it's like, it's a little Phantom of the Opera, which like hits those notes. And also he's just very like caring and like really into her. And also he is a beast that isn't like, he doesn't transform at any point. Like he remains beastly the entire time. Like there's no curse or anything involved.
He's like a sexy, cowardly lion. That's how
yeah,
I would
he is. He's a sexy, sexy cat man, if you will. And young me was like, yes, sexy, sexy cat man. Well, there's that, I think. And then that led into a little known Disney television show called Gargoyles.
A little known.
No, I know, little known. The classic television from the 90s, Gargoyles, that I was very much into. Goliath, of course. And who was played by Keith David, which is weird when you consider some of my new, like, monster romance fixations.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with it. Yeah. Yeah, Keith David's voice as a big buff gargoyle was really telling for me. Because you also had him, and then you had Marina Sirtis from Star Trek fame as Demona, the female gargoyle, and it was very confusing for me. It was a confusing time growing up.
Yeah, that there's a lot of sexy voice talent on that show, right?
There is a ton of it, like mo like because like I could only think of Riker is the character he plays in Star Trek. Frakes
Jonathan
plays
Frakes,
Jonathan
yeah.
Frakes plays Xanatos, and Data is my like favorite character from the show altogether. Puck, because of course that's that
That checks
also comes
out.
into the medieval like non-human like fairy stuff too, But speaking of fairies, there was also when I was way too young to be reading them, I ran across some fairy smut in the late 90s that I should not have had access to, but I was given an ARC, like an advanced reader's copy of a smutty book, and it was about fairy sex. And one of them, there was an encounter where one of the fairy guys had like tentacles, and I was like, oh, tell me more. What is happening here? Like,
Oh, so it unlocked something else too.
it did unlock something within me. So that those are kind of like when I talk about the subject, I want everyone to know that this is coming from a like a personal spot of like, yes, let us talk about monsters.
I would venture to say that probably it is such a huge thing for people in our age range because we came of age during like the Wild West days of the internet, and we did have access to a bunch of stuff we probably should not have been looking at the time.
Oh, 100%. We definitely should not have been that. We should not have been that unsupervised on the internet. People today, especially younger people, feel a lot of times like the internet is a not a safe place, and it's not. Like I do want to venture that like social media is not for kids, and because our generation realized that firsthand as we were allowed to just sort of wander.
It was a different time. I know
It
that is
was a
such an
different
old
time.
person thing to say, but it really was a different time. I had to explain ASL to a younger person recently, and it made my back hurt just having to do that.
ASL does not mean American Sign Language.
No.
It does mean, in case you're wondering, age, sex, and location, which is what you used to ask each other in chat rooms when you were too young to be on the chat rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those M for M chat rooms that I was in as a
Oh,
teenager.
was it the Yahoo ones?
I know it was the AOL ones.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay. Oh my gosh, of course. Yeah, so the internet was a different time, very different from now, not nearly as sanitized. The internet is a little bit more sanitized now than it was.
there's like four websites now, and that's it.
That's
Like
true.
the internet is truly dead. I really do like
That's a sad, sad thought.
that's
But yeah, I think
not what
these,
we're here to talk about.
no, it's not. It's not what we're talking about. I think that's why I think it's interesting to talk about this topic because we are going to go into not just which fish man would you like to have sex with? But more, I wanted to talk about the history of teratophilia. And that is the official term for monster fucking, which is really refers to like a sexual attraction to monsters.
Too fancy.
Too fancy. Well, the original term like was in a connotation of sort of like a kink originally when it was coined. It was a kink for people who are attracted to others with a physical disability or a physical like deformation or something like that.
Okay.
These days we don't use it in that context, right? It's not referred to as like a kink or like a fetish a lot of times. It is more of an overall attraction to monsters, not people that we used to think were monstrous because they had physical characteristics that some people were uncomfortable with,
Right.
So I want to pull it this away from its roots in ableism. Like 100%. But I do want to acknowledge that's where the term kind of originated in.
But it's good to reclaim those type of things, so.
I definitely think so. I definitely think so. And I would say that a lot of times we've always been sort of fascinated with the other, and we've always been fascinated with monsters in a lot of
You mean in
ways.
general or just the two of us?
I mean, yeah, I think in general, I think
Okay,
people,
but also
human
the two of
beings, but
us.
also the two of us. This is, yeah. I think people have always been fascinated with the other, with fascinated with this idea of quote unquote like what is a monster? And growing up, I think we do see a lot of monsters in media, and we do talk about them a lot because some of the classic films that we always go back to are about monsters. because you have the Nosferatu, you have your Frankenstein's creations, you have your Wolfman. And then, of course, like you have your Creature from the Black Lagoon, which you talked extensively about in the last episode.
Extensively,
Extensively,
extensively.
extensively. And most of the time, you see them as villains, of course. And this is where a lot of this comes from, is this idea of they were always seen as villains. They were like lusting after the nubile flesh of young women, largely. Like, think about King Kong, for example, or again, the Creature from the Black Lagoon. But like, they were never. But as long as we've told these stories about monsters, we've always told stories about erotic monsters, right? Because when you look at it, like look at one of the very first vampire stories that predates Dracula is of course Carmilla. And that's the classic lesbian vampire story where she is a very like it's a very homoerotic story about a young girl who has a quote unquote friend that she meets who turns out to be a vampire. And
Tell us all
then
this time.
it is a tale as old as time, of course, of course. Like there, I mean, early vampire stories are full of homoerotic subtext. And one day we'll talk about how there are no straight vampires,
There
but
are, yeah,
not
no.
today. Yeah. But in those early stories, you see a lot of the protagonist being tempted by these monsters, these sexy monsters, before ultimately like killing them or escaping the seduction somehow. And the morally righteous win after all. But that's not really what we're here to talk about. Let's be honest. That story is tired. I would like to talk about the sexy monsters and, of course, the origin of monster fucking.
Yes, I am ready to be schooled. I want you to impart your academic knowledge to me about why we like to fuck things that go bump in the night.
So what do you know specifically about kind of, do you know anything about the history of this like attraction to monsters or anything of where it comes from or anything like that?
I mean, really, just kind of what I picked up from popular culture. Again, growing up in the age that we did, I think we were also exposed to a lot of animated media that kind of explored these topics as well that we probably shouldn't have been watching. So everything that I have is just kind of gleaned from that.
Okay. So I think some of the earliest examples of what we would call this like attraction to monsters, really the biggest part of it rose kind of in the 2010s. That's where you got to see a lot of it kind of happen. And that is, of course, around the rise of films like The Shape of Water, which again, we talked about. But it goes back earlier than that. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because if you are interested, there is a great video by video essayist Lindsay Ellis on YouTube called Monster Boyfriend, where she kind of takes you back through the history of it. And I recommend that everyone watch that because it's a great video where she explores the tradition of animal bridegrooms, which we know as the story of Beauty and the Beast, right?
Right.
But lots of cultures have these stories in them. And we see them in all across the world. There are African traditions, there are East Asian traditions. Usually you see them with like the fox bride or the fox bride, groom or things like that. You also have the myth of Eros and Psyche, which is very similar to Beauty and the Beast in the Greek traditions.
I
So
mean,
there's
the Greeks are littered with that
Oh
stuff.
yeah, no, we're gonna get to the Greeks. Don't worry. I have a whole section on that. But yes, you're right. Like the ancient Greeks are definitely one of the biggest kind of proponents of these, especially when you go into what do you know about the
I mean, I have like, yeah, base knowledge of it just
Minotaur?
from, the kind of mythology we learned in school, which I tangent, but like, why was that such a huge thing in school? Why was that such a huge topic that was pushed on to us? Was
Greek
it just that?
mythology or is
Yes. I remember watching the old school Clash of the Titans
Oh, I love
in
that movie.
school and the teacher going up to cover the screen when there was like, because there's breast. I think there's bare breast in the
Yes,
original.
there are.
Yeah, going and covering that up. Very, very vivid memory of that. And then also kind of what I've gleaned from playing Hades.
Okay. So you have
Yeah.
a pretty start. Yeah. So
Yeah.
let's talk about the Minotaur or Minotaur, depending upon how you would like to pronounce it. Let's do like first of all, for those who aren't familiar, I'll go over the brief myth of it because I think this is pretty important in the grand scheme of monster fuckers. So according to the myth, the queen of Crete was cursed by Poseidon to fall desperately in love with a white bull that was supposedly so beautiful, right, that even her husband couldn't bring himself to sacrifice it. So of course, Poseidon is like, because Poseidon is a vindictive bitch, let me tell you. He is like, you're not going to sacrifice this to me? Well, fine, your wife's in love with it. Good job. Because Greek gods are petty. This is how they work.
Yeah, but at least they were creative in their pettiness.
Yeah. So this queen is so desperate to just be with this bull. She covertly speaks to her husband's, like, this inventor who was basically like her husband, had come to her husband's court for patronage, who is Daedalus, who was the most famous, skilled inventor of all of ancient Greece. There are some stories about him too. And he created a hollow cow for her that she could fit her body inside so that she could have sex with this bull, of course, because she was again cursed to be in love with this bull. And out of that, she birthed Asterius, who is the Minotaur. And what?
Question.
Yeah.
So, because I know that there's the like that torture that is putting somebody like in a golden, like, or in like a metal bull or metal cow type thing and putting fire underneath it. Is that also kind of the origin of that too, maybe?
I don't think so.
No.
I also am not sure how verified those specific tortures are, because a
Oh, of
lot of things
course.
we talk about for medieval torture didn't actually happen. I don't know about that one. That one could have. I haven't done the research, but I don't think that there's a connection between them. But that's a good question. Something to look up. Or for someone to tell us, who knows? I'm not a medieval like histories person. So yeah, this baby was born and it was just this unholy fusion of man and beast is kind of how it's always described, that like grew into this big, massive creature that hungered for human flesh. Of course, it had the bottom half of a man and the like torso. This sort of became more bullish as it passed, and then this giant head of a bull with huge horns, and that's how it described. So at the time, Minos was freaking out because his wife has given birth to a monster, basically. And he consults the Oracle of Delphi, which everyone did in that time period. And the Oracle says, okay, so you can't kill it because the gods will get mad at you if you kill it. But here's what we're going to do. And so he has Daedalus as a punishment. He had build something for him again. And this is, of course, a labyrinth that he puts this Minotaur in the labyrinth to live out its days. And then he also punishes him by putting Daedalus and his son in the labyrinth as well. But Daedalus, of course, knew how to get out but couldn't, because if any he got out, they were going to kill him. And yeah, because Daedalus created the cow. And that, of course, gets to the story of Theseus versus the Minotaur and a lot of other things. So that's like our first kind of big story about first, like this idea of humans and animals and divine influence, and of course, this monstrous beast, which, if you have played the game Hades, you understand why there are so many of us who love the character of Asterius, who is a non-playable character in that game and recontextualizes the myth of Theseus and Asterius, which I love. I think it's great. They're boyfriends. You can't tell me any different.
Everybody fucks and dates in that game, everyone.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
And they're all hot.
So you have a lot of stories like this where you have people that are either like cursed or unnaturally attracted to animals. And then you can't get out of Greek mythology without talking about the number one fuckboy.
Oh, Zeus.
Of course, 100% Zeus. Zeus will, of course, fuck everybody. And I'm not just talking about women. Like, Zeus was equal opportunity if you read some stuff. Like, it's definitely in there. And let me tell you about Zeus's own experience in monster fucking, because he just didn't have sex with people as himself, of course. Oh no, that's too petty for Zeus. Here are a list of things that Zeus transformed into, and I say things, and it's very important, I say things in order to bang ladies.
Yeah, let's
Yeah,
go.
here's my list. One, a bull, a swan.
My favorite.
There's some great classic art of this lady and the swan. A shower of golden coins.
Not a golden shower.
Not a golden shower, a shower of golden coins. I was like, wait a second, I need to make sure I phrase this very carefully. A satyr, because they historically were always very horny. An absent
Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
husband, a dragon, and an eagle. And that's just a small amount of things that Zeus transformed into. So yeah, we have a grand tradition in the West of these fictional, like these mythological creature, mythological creatures, mythological people who would go along and do these things. And of course, that's not even talking about the tradition of satyrs and centaurs, who were both historically like very horny critters that would also often have sex with humans when they were able to.
Well, I mean, I think traditionally, like pretty much anything that was considered to have an animalistic aspect to it was perceived as being kind of very sexual and horny all the time, right? Just because
Yes.
there's that lack of like the control we have as humans.
Yeah, there was definitely a separation between human and beast that we see a lot in these kind of stories, especially with like centaurs were known to be particularly savage and would carry off women, which makes certain things very disturbing when you think about them in pop culture today. And then, of course, satyrs historically have had, they're a little more like easygoing in a lot of myths and stories and stuff. Basically, they're going to play their pan flutes and hang out with Pan and drink a lot, and then also just bang a bunch of nymphs. And human ladies too. I'm not going to say, you know, there's a lot of questionable sexual activity that happens in Greek mythology all across the board.
Satyrs are festival bros. That's what they
They
are.
really are. Yeah, no, 100%. They're hippies and yeah, they're festival bros. So we have that tradition in the West a lot too. But that's not to say that like we in our even religious upbringing and backgrounds don't often have these as well, which is always makes me laugh when I bring this up because you don't think about the Christian tradition as having anything remotely like sexual at all in it, right? It's
There is
not a
so
thing.
much of that in the Bible. Like that's the
There
thing. It's
is.
like the Bible is TVMA for content, for
It is
sure.
100% the Bible itself. And of course, this isn't even counting like in the puritanical era in both Europe and America, where women were very much accused of having sex with the devil and sex with demons. That was a very common accusation for women, especially if they had some sort of birthmark in an odd place or something. It was a mark that someone had sex with the devil or things like that. You see a lot of like Satan sex if you read a lot of old court documents and what people were accused of. I mean, it's true. There was a lot of that where, and people wrote in great detail. There is an article from Vice that we will link in the show notes that basically is like sex with demons was totally chill until the church ruined it. And it talks a little bit about some of the historical texts and documents that they found that describes in great detail sex with the devil. And you're like, sir, can we have a conversation about repression just a little bit? So that's common. But also, of course, the King, like the New King James Version of the Bible itself, which, as you've mentioned, said, has a lot of weird stuff in it.
So much weird stuff.
So much weird
Much weird
stuff.
stuff. It's
Have you?
violent, it's sexual, it's everything that Christians try some well, let me rephrase that. It's everything that some Christians try to say that they're not.
Yeah. Well, have you ever heard of the Philium?
Oh, the Nephilim?
Nephilim. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
That's what you pronounce it. Nephilim. Yeah, of course. And what are
Because
those?
angels like to fuck. Angels like to
Yeah.
fuck.
And that's something that's like really strange that isn't talked about today, that there are these passages in the Bible. And I've got the passage for you, and I will read it before we talk about this. And this is from Genesis 6:4. So if you would like to read along at home with your Bibles, this is the New King
Crack
James
your Bible
Version. Crack your
too.
Bible. We're gonna go. There were giants in the earth on these days. And also after that, when the sons of God came onto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. So the New King James Version refers to these as like these giants, right? The giants walk the earth. But if you look back into the older tradition, they were called Nephilim. What are Nephilim who are the sons of God and the daughters of men, right? Because sons of God, are the angels having sex with human women?
Yes, and my understanding is that it strictly was just kind of the higher angels, like archangels. Is that correct?
So I am not sure on that one. That is not something that I have heard about, but like it would make sense if it were the higher angels. Now, today, a lot of Christians do argue that sons of God refer to some random nebulous human men who were totally better than other men, right? Sons of God are the God's chosen men. But there's no context for that, especially in Genesis. There's no context for that where these sons of God came onto the daughters of man. Because who were the daughters of man if that's the phrasing is very interesting in that.
Yeah.
So a lot of like there's been a lot of talk and a lot of discussion about whether or not these were, of course, the giants were the sons of angels themselves. And that's how we became the quote unquote giants that were mighty men of old, men of renown.
That Darren Aronofsky Noah movie that came out, which is actually much better than people give it credit for. That it starts out with that. It talks about the giants, the Nephilim in it.
Yeah,
It's
I
one of
haven't
the
seen it, but
reasons
I've heard
people
it.
got really pissed because it's like they don't know their own biblical history. It's like, no,
Yeah.
that stuff is in the
That
Bible.
stuff is in the Bible. So it's kind of an interesting like thing where we have these conversations about this as early as, Genesis, according to the Christian tradition. So yeah, we have a lot of that going on early. But I think when most people think about weird monster fucking, there's really one thing that always comes to mind, especially for those of us who are raised on the internet. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Well, I did make a comment a little earlier about how we were exposed to lots of animated media that we probably
Yes,
should not have been
we
exposed to. I
were.
think that that's where we're going.
We're going there. Where are we going, JD?
Tentacle porn.
Tentacle porn. You cannot talk about this subject without talking about tentacle porn. I'm sorry. That's just what it is. And I think at this point, most people are familiar with it, if not in a meme or a joke. If you are online at all, then you have heard about it. Even if you haven't seen it, and like that's fine. Like I wouldn't recommend watching a lot of it. But it is definitely one of the, I think, kind of the seminal works when people think about having sex with monsters. Tentacles come into play somehow.
I remember the first time. Like, I even remember the anime that I saw in for the first time.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of the first anime that I ever saw, and not only is there tentacle porn in it, but there was a lot of like really kind of amped up first in that one for me. I think, and I may have mispronounced the title of it, it's Yurata Sokadoji, Legend of the Overfiend, I
Okay.
think is the name of it.
I am familiar with the title, but I have not watched that.
It was
Yeah.
very, very impactful on me.
No, and I think that there's like I think my one of my first experiences watching it is a very notorious hentai, which is a Japanese term for sex, basically sexy animation called LaBlue Girl, which is not safe for anyone. Not safe
I'm
for
familiar
anyone.
with that one too,
Yeah,
yeah.
don't watch it. I'll be telling you right now, don't watch it. Trigger warnings all over the place for all of that. But yeah, I think people are at least aware of this in this space. And that's usually what people think of the monsters, they think of it. And of course, like if you're the least bit online, I'm extremely online, and you are too, in our various ways. You've heard of tentacle porn. You heard that probably it has some sort of origins from Japan, right? And if you're
Correct.
not sure, like, typically seen in sexual anime or hentai, it usually depicts a woman being assaulted or pleasured by tentacles. And sometimes it's consensual, sometimes it's not. People have used the term like tentacle porn and then also use the term tentacle play to sort of talk about it when it is a more consensual aspect.
I like that. I like the wording of that.
Yeah, tentacle play is a term that is sort of used. And I think tentacle play, as we'll discuss, is a little more relevant to our topic. So, of course, like the first instance you see of tentacle porn, I would say, is there's a 1986 short, animated short called Guyver, Out of Control. And if you don't know, like, Guyver is a long-running and incredibly popular, like, anime, manga, live-action series, right? It's been going forever. And it is a horror sci-fi series about high schoolers and biomechs. And you can make of that what you will, but it's been going on for a long time. And that was one of the first instances where you see it in that. But again, this genre is so much more than that, right? And when I was in college, I took a course on art, like the history of animation and the history of comics specifically. And of course, one of the things we talked about in detail was ukiyo-e art. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am not.
Okay, so this is my art history lesson. I'm also not an art historian, but this is fun to talk about too. And this is relevant, I will say. So this is a traditional art style of woodblock prints, right? That was very popular during the Edo period, which was between 1603 and 1868 in Japan. So we're talking historical reference here, right? And you have seen at least one piece of this art style. And what have you seen? Yeah.
It's the big wave.
The big wave. Yeah, the great wave off of Kanagawa.
Also, I have also seen, and I do have to preface this, I was not looking at this for sexual reasons. I was looking at
Okay.
it just to prove it to things, because Tanukis are always depicted as having giant balls.
They do, they sit on them.
And every instance I could find of that to show people is on these like on these wood like these wood wood prints, like these woodblock
Yeah.
prints. Yeah.
And Tanukis are a they are a real creature, I will point out. But the Tanukis that we often talk about in literature stuff are also considered magical creatures. They're raccoon dogs. And I've seen them in real life. They're adorable. They don't have giant balls in real life. But every depiction of them kind of depicts them as this like magical creature that sits on its balls and performs magic by its balls. There is a Studio Ghibli film called Pom Poko about them, and it's very adorable, all things considered.
My favorite is there is one, and they are on a boat, like a sailboat, and the sail of the boat is the ball skin, like it's
Okay, sure. You know, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. So yeah, you have all these woodblock prints, and I think one of the best known artists in the West is, of course, Hokusai Katsusuka, who is the artist behind the Great Wave, which everyone has seen. I have like a sweatshirt with it on it because like I love this art style. Everyone's seen it. It's cliche at this point, right?
I mean, there's a Lego set for
Yeah,
that, is it? Yeah.
he's an incredibly famous artist, and this might surprise you. Because he's such an incredibly famous artist, did you know that he's also the creator of one of the earliest and most iconic tentacle-themed robotic art piece?
No.
All right, yeah. So we talk about the origins of tentacle play specifically. Hokusai is one of the progenitors of that. Now, I am going to show you this art piece. I'm so excited for you to see it. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about it before you tell me what you are seeing. Okay. I'm so excited for this. Because I have you seen, do you know the piece that I'm talking about?
I think I might now, like now
Okay.
that, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so we, of course, are going to, I'm going to send this to you.
Okay, I have seen this
Okay.
before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, of course, this piece that we're talking about is 1814's Tako no Ama, which is the real name is The Diver and the Octopi. Which is a famous etching, which is more popularly known in English-speaking countries as The Dream of the Fisherman's Wife. And I don't know if we'll be able to show this in our show notes or not. So I recommend that you guys look it up. And can you tell me what you are seeing in this piece?
Yeah, Instagram would definitely take this down, I think.
It is classic art, so I don't
There's
know.
yeah. We have a an octopus that is performing oral sex on a woman and various tentacles on parts of her body, and it looks like there is another smaller octopus at her mouth.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That is certainly what you are seeing. And this piece is incredibly well known. And people often say, like, oh wow, it's so erotic. And it is. But the weird thing is there's a really fun story behind this piece, which sort of introduces it to us. And the history behind this piece is that it is actually a parody of a Buddhist story about an abalone diver, which is a popular figure of art for the era. There's a lot of these female divers that are depicted in various states of undress or like draped clothing over them or things like that, whether in the water, out of the water. So this is a very popular figure seen in like kind of, I think we would almost call them like pinups today in a lot of ways, but also more serious art. And this Buddhist story of this diver is that she is escaping from the underwater Dragon King and his minions after stealing a jewel from him. And this is a parody of that piece where she is does not escape and is caught by one of his minions. And I want to make it very clear that like the text around this is a consensual erotic scene. This is not like if you can read the Japanese, there's a lot that goes into it that this is supposedly a very like consensual scene that we are seeing here. And this isn't like the first piece of art like this. You can see earlier works from at least the 1700s of artists depicting these cheeky divers. And occasionally you'll get like a cephalopod or two, like kind of like calming up her leg or like approaching her, sort of like, oh ho ho, let's have some fun. But these are not necessarily seen as like assault photos, right? They are very kind of like cheeky, almost pinup art. Like, okay, for
Right.
example, like the very classic of the dog pulling down the girl's like shorts, or you know what I'm talking about, that pinup.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that you would see. And this like tradition of art carries forward, and you see a lot more of it going on. And especially when you see these depictions of these like tentacle creatures that happen much later in time. So like Japan has a long history of showing these kinds of things, especially with tentacles. And later on, you will see stuff in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that is a lot less consensual. You see a lot of depictions of assault. But I do want to bring
Right.
this back into this is the tentacle play era where we are not seeing assault. We are seeing this. Because I kind of wonder, like, why is it always tentacles in these stories? Like, why do we always see tentacles in these arts, especially specifically from Japan?
I mean, the easiest and most obvious is because it's phallic in nature, because tentacles are somewhat phallic in nature.
You're 100% right. That's because it's an easy depiction. And there is a reason that they had to show tentacles instead of other types of penetration. And that's because
You
Japan
can't. You
has
can't.
a crazy censorship that has been going on like from the Edo period into the Meiji Restoration, which was up in like until around like 1945, that you see where everything was heavily censored. Everything. Even during like the occupation of Japan by American forces, they had hard like anti-censorship laws that didn't quite cover pornography, but did sort of. You could still get in trouble for it. You cannot to this day sell or distribute uncensored pornography in Japan.
It's all pixelated. Any
It's
type
all
of,
pixelated.
yeah,
There,
any
there's
type of
little lines.
penetrative act is, yeah,
Yes,
is pixelated.
it's
Yeah.
pixelated on there. You cannot show it. You cannot depict it. So a lot of artists, from far onward, like would have stand-in acts for these sorts of things. So instead of like penises, and like often you couldn't even show pubic hair. That was off the table as well. There would be tentacles, a lot of tentacles involved. And yeah, of course, if you've ever seen any pornographic manga, you'll always notice there's like an itty bitty tiny censor bar on all male
Little black
genitalia. Yeah,
bar,
little black bar
little black
on,
bar.
but just on like the male genitalia too. A lot of times you'll just see it. So yeah, and like, so the tradition of these like, of like tentacles does date back from like real art. This is art, not pornography, from this era, but we still see it today. It's still very common in that today. And people like to say, oh, the Japanese are so weird. Like, gosh, and their tentacles. Okay. Have they never seen a Roger Corman movie? Right? Like, I mean, come on. You ever watch the Dunwich Horror or Galaxy of Terror? Or even the, oh gosh, what is the one with the humanoids from the deep? Like, come on, this is a thing. This, like, don't say that Japan and they're like, and I specifically am using this as not as a defense of Japan because I am not that much of a weeb to say they have the perfect culture, but Western culture is just as bad as depicting things in this context, and you even see tentacle assault in films like the original Evil Dead film. This is not something that Japan alone is guilty of doing.
Oh no, 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 no.
And this is, but I do think it's important to talk about the origins of it coming from the same woodblock artist that brought us the wave.
That's it gives with both hands.
Really does. It really does. I'll try to pull up a few other like kind of more cheeky tentacle prints to put in our show notes because I think this one might be a little too graphic, but I encourage everyone to at least look at it and kind of understand the history and context behind these things. So yeah, that is like a lot of the origins of kind of the love of monsters and romancing the monster, and of course like the idea of the animal bridegroom or the animal bride as it were, because in the east you have the kitsune fox figure from Japan. And it's Hulajang, I think is what it's called in China. I think that's the name of it. They have their own specific like fox spirit that is seductress ladies usually. Foxes are usually seductive ladies that people are like into, and then they see the tail. You have figures like the Hodra from Scandinavia that is a woman with a cow's tail, and she has a hollow back like a tree, apparently.
A good example of like the kitsune is I think that was like a kind of a I really enjoyed the depiction of it was in Lovecraft Country in the series. Yeah, I think they did a good job with that.
Yeah, there is that. And there's also, have you seen Love, Sex, and Robots?
Oh,
There
yes.
is a really good one, and this is based on a short story. And I think that depiction of fox spirit, and it's also kind of like a little bit of a cyberpunk story as well. in it. Let me find the name of it for you. If you have not seen this, I do highly recommend watching Love, Sex, and Robots. Not all of them are like winners every time, but a lot of them are very, very good. It is in the first season and it is called Good Hunting. And it is a version of a Chinese fox spirit that is, it's a very, very good story, I think. And again, trigger warnings come, not anything on screen, but there is sort of the mention of kind of people doing bad things to the other. But yeah, like in another light, like, you know, again, a lot of these early stories that we hear about too, as we talked about last week, come from this idea of changing the monster into something lovable.
I can fix him.
I can fix him. Yeah, I can fix him. And that's, it's such a popular thing, right? It's like, I can fix him. And how that has sort of changed in the 2010s to, oh no, he's fine. I like him better this way. And a lot of that, honestly, and this might be the thing that breaks my soul a little bit to say, comes a little bit from Tumblr culture. I do think that you see the social media culture of that era of being like, oh no, I'm into this. And other people being like, oh, you're into this too. Okay, I liked Beast better before he was a nondescript prince from, you know, the classic like Beauty and the Beast. Or I was into this character before he was like quote unquote hot, sort of things that we see a lot of in there. But yeah. I guess now, like, I don't know, is there anything that I didn't cover in that?
No, I think that that's a lot of good information. It gives a lot of really good intellectual basis for wanting to fuck monstrous things.
Well, yeah, and I think that kind of can bring us to like the whys of people. Why are so many people? Why has this fascinated us for so long? Why do we keep going back to these things? And there's a person that's been doing a really great study online called, you can look up the website. It's Monstrous Desire is their study that they've been doing, and it goes into the researcher, they are kind of new to this idea of monsters. And if you read one of their articles, it's great because one of their gateways was actually, in a related topic, The Lighthouse, the Eggers movie, The Lighthouse.
Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of their gateway to being, this movie made me feel things and I'm not really sure about it. They have a pretty fun essay on it on their website. And that also, I'll link that in the show notes, where they have researched, done a ton of research on people that are kind of like into monsters. And if you are fascinated into like some of the demographics about these things to be like, well, what are people really into? Like, according to the study, like 60% of the people who answered the study were LGBTQ plus. So that can tell you something too. 70% of the respondents identified as women. And a lot of the respondents in this case were from the United States, which I think might just be a sample bias. I would love to see a bigger sample across. But I do find it fascinating that a lot of people in the LGBTQ community are attracted to monsters. And I think like we are two examples of that, speaking from our own experience. But I think a lot of reason that is again, like we have grown up being othered for so long. And like it's easy to identify with the monster in a lot of
Yes,
ways.
you can identify with the monster, and usually in these cases, since they are monstrous, like they are supernatural in nature, so they have some sort of like base of power. They're marginalized, but they're the versions of us that can fight back.
And when you look at the things that like people have in this study, and I'm just doing a big cursory overview, I'm going to invite everyone to go look at this if this is what you're interested in, to talk about their first monster crushes. They had like a great sheet of like, here's what people are into. And I think we can all agree with some of these. First of all, Legend 1985, The Darkness. Played by the Tim Curry. No, everyone's into it. Yeah.
Not me. Not me.
Really? You are into,
No, because
oh,
yeah,
I was very
you just
into.
answered your own question, didn't you?
It's because that you the there was a twink. It
Yeah,
was
exactly.
Tom Cruise. You were all about Tom Cruise, yeah. I mean, you had you like but so no, for me it was all the darkness. All the
And for
darkness.
some people, it's Mia Sara's dress.
So yeah, some people it is that. You also have people that find some curiosity in the xenomorph from the Alien franchise, which is designed to
To be
be
sexy.
sexy. Like, if you look at the design of the xenomorph and Giger's art in general, like, the design is very curvaceous in a lot of ways. It's very sleek the way that
It's
it's.
sleek It's wet.
It's sleek and wet. Yeah, like it's all there. He did this on purpose. They did this on purpose. I and you can Giger said himself, that's what he's into. So, yeah. So you have that
Oh,
aspect of it.
and penetration is a part of that too.
Penetration is a massive part of Alien, the Alien like franchise in general. We could have a whole thing about the themes and underlying context of that. But yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, aliens are sexy. And sure, no, the design's there. Of course, if you're me, it was Hellboy as a connoisseur of both the film franchise and the comic book and Ron Perlman. These things provided for the Hellboy. Of course, gargoyles, as I mentioned, Venom from the Venom film. The Tom Hardy Venom film. People were into that a lot.
Well,
Yeah.
because Tom Hardy plays that up.
Oh no, they're boyfriends.
Yeah.
Venom is a rom-com. Prove me wrong. Interview with the Vampire, of course, gets us into some of their vampires things. People were very attracted. I mean, people were very attracted to Lestat and Louis. Buffy, I think for a lot of millennials, especially older millennials, was their root of their monster attraction, their monster crush. You had
Because you have Angel, you have Spike, you have Oz.
Yep. You got Evil Willow.
Well,
Vampire Willow. No, Vampire Willow.
Oh, Vampire Willow. Oh, yeah.
I'm evil and I think I'm kind of gay.
Yeah, and maybe a little gay.
Gay. Also, like, Darla, if you're into the super crazy. And Harmony, if you like bimbos. So, like, there's something for everyone in that. Yeah, Inuyasha is also a big one for a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah, Inuyasha,
Yeah.
we're here for it. For the younger generation, you get a lot of Vampire Diaries being mentioned as it. All Dracula characters constantly.
All
Hexes,
your,
yeah.
all your, you know, you'd say Dracula's plural,
All
all your
Draculas, all Draculas, yeah.
Draculas.
Van Helsing 2004 was very popular. Is very
Is that
popular.
the, who was in that one?
That's Hugh Jackman. So yeah.
Okay, yeah, that
It
makes sense.
yeah. There's also a series called Ice Planet Barbarians, which is a romance novel series. And that apparently has some sort of, I think it's aliens. I think it's aliens that people are into in that one. I haven't read them. I've heard about them. They were self-published books that have gotten like someone talked about them on the book talk and then it got out of control. And of course, for those of us who, again, animated things that confused us when we were children, Hexus from Ferngully.
Oh my God.
Right? Yeah. So you see a lot of that. Like, I think some of the most, like, and then they went into like some of the most recent media that people were kind of getting into, where people mentioned, let's see, a lot of books, a lot of book authors, where you had like the Ice Planet Barbarian series, of course, the books like The Dragon's Bride, Kraken Sacrifice, Demon's Bargain, where romance
Kraken's
novels. Yeah,
sacrifice.
yeah. A lot of people are into Resident Evil characters, I'll have you know.
I will out myself. I have seen plenty of Mr. X and Leon Kennedy are
I
so.
have two. I have two. Yep, it's there. Nemesis, people are big into Nemesis. People are big into Heisenberg from Village, and also Lady D and the daughters, of course. Mother Miranda. And like, a lot of very scary people are like were real into like Wesker and everything. And the entire design, if you've ever played the Resident Evil games or seen the earlier movies, the liquors, come on. Like, that's just it just writes itself. What am I gonna say there? So yeah. So you have a lot of stuff like that. Of course, The Shape of Water did a lot of stuff for that. Dracula's Wives, all the Witcher characters, everyone's real into Witcher. There's a lot of books. Oh, a Vecna. Vecna is apparently very popular too from Stranger Things series.
I can see that.
Yeah, people are into it. That's fine. And then of course you have more traditional versions of the animal bridegroom, like the Ancient Magus's Bride, which is an anime. So these are all like modern interpretations of this that have come like in the last like like 20, 30 years, we see all this stuff. And of course, oh, sorry, I forgot out one. Pyramid Head. Pyramid Head from Silent Hill.
I've seen a lot of that
I've seen a lot of
art.
sexy pyramid heads, a lot. I've seen a lot of cosplay that's sexy pyramid head, and you're like, you have made a choice, and I am
I'm
100%
here for it.
supporting it.
I'm here
Yeah.
for it.
Yeah. So you have a lot of that in like sort of examples that this study has pulled in, and I love to see it. I love to see it. Most people prefer books with erotic monsters in them over their media choices, which I also thought was interesting.
I don't know, because you can kind of like, I mean, none of us have imaginations anymore, but you can use what little you have left to kind of picture it yourself. Yeah.
I also think that film and television makes it hard to depict monsters because you have the limits of what your budget can do.
Yeah.
When you write about things in a book, there's no budget. Also, you could be as explicit as you would like.
That
So
part,
that makes
yeah.
a lot of sense. So yeah. So those are a lot of monsters we're attracted to. I would really like to take a moment to delve into why. Like we've talked about the history of it, we've talked about what people have found to be attractive, but the why. And I think it's easy to see again the othering thing, but there are a lot of other reasons why people might find this attractive. And one is, of course, and this is a big one, is the taboo of it. It is,
We want to be bad.
we want to be bad. Like it
We want
is,
to be bad. We want to be so bad.
it's illicit, it's wrong, it's a little dirty, you know? It's, this is something that you have, you know, in your fantasy. It's not something you want in real life, but like these are not, like they're not technically human, but they are sentient creatures. So it's a little bit taboo. It's like you have this concept of like tentacles that come into play, and then you also have things like blood sucking. You have the various aspects of werewolf transformations in whatever form that your werewolf lover is taking during sex, which whatever floats your boat. I'm not here to squick somebody's kinks. This is not what I'm about. So yeah, there's a lot of taboo aspects for these monsters and what they represent. Maybe they're evil, and maybe that's something that you can fantasize about freely, but that you wouldn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole in real life for a lot of things. And then there's, of course, another thing we talked about, which is changing the monster. I can make him
I
better.
can fix
I
him,
can fix
yeah.
him. I can fix him, of course. And that's like the original narrative, right? Of these like animal bridegrooms and this idea that you can make somebody better by just with your love. You can fix someone with your love. And that is still, I think, some of the most popular ones, especially when it comes to like heterosexual like pairings and these things we see, because this is an idea that he specifically, you know, a lot of these, all the romance is told from a female perspective. This is, you know, he changes through your love for him. They are becoming better because you love them. And is it problematic? Oh, like 100%. Like you can't do this in real life. People don't, you know, this is, you know, but within the context of fantasy, it's a really nice thought that like you see someone, it's why people love 50 Shades of Grey, right? It's like,
Yeah.
this is the thing here is like she fixes this broken man who does monstrous things through her love. And that's part of it. And I think that's valid. If that's what you're into, that's what you're into.
But I think it's interesting that you mentioned in heterosexual depictions that that's a huge thing. And I would like, and I just from my own experience, and also I think maybe even just kind of more broadly. Now that people are okay, like you can let the monster stay a monster. I think that that's the big thing now. Yeah.
I think that is the big thing. And like that's that, yeah, that's where we're going with this. Like you're still in my thunder, but that is
I'm
absolutely where
sorry,
we're going
sorry.
with. No, but you're 100% right. Like I think traditional aspects were this thing. But yeah, like the idea of letting the monster stay the monster is a big part of that. But before we get there, let's go through a few more. Yeah. You have the idea of like there's a very short like distance between like terror and desire. Like they're both very strong emotions, right?
Being scared and
So
being horny are
yeah, being
right there
scared, being horny,
together.
right there together. So as my partner likes to explain their attraction to Lazelle from Baldur's Gate, they get scaroused. You're scared of her and also aroused by her. So to describe this sort of, you know, like that's the thing. It's like, oh no. And of course, if you've ever played Baldur's Gate 3, Lazelle is a Githyanki who are non-human character, who's also very attractive. Oh yeah, no, 100%. I see the appeal there. But yeah, that's a thing though. Is like you, there's a little bit of like, oh no, are they gonna hurt me? Are they gonna hurt me? Oh no, we're gonna have sex. It's gonna be great. But that fear that someone like could hurt you. Oh, it's they're scary to everyone else, but they're not to me. Like I'm not scared. It's a vampire erotica for hundreds of years has been written about this, you know, the oh no. I mean, Twilight even has it. What are you? Say it. Say what I know what you are. You know, like that whole thing. Like there's
This is
that
the
much
skin of a killer,
the
Bella.
element of danger. And that also comes into is like this element of like it's a dangerous relationship, you know, it's taboo, but it's also it's like it's dangerous on a, like a level two. And again, problematic in real life, fine in fantasy. Then you have the idea of dominance. Some people are really into the dominance of like letting go of control. And you have someone bigger and stronger than you that is able to take control, knowing that they have a lot of power. They're so strong. And that's where you get into like your size difference kink and things like that, where the people are very much into. it's still a fantasy because you know that they're not going to hurt you. You know, like when you're reading a book, that like the lead character that you are following, this big, like oversized, I don't know, orc man is not going to hurt the main character. It's not a thing that's going to happen, but like you have a little, again, 50 Shades of Grey, the whole dominance thing. And then of course that like the monster here is that you are okay with the monster being the monster because you are accustomed to it. You know, they're fine as they are. It's not, let me fix him. I'm attracted to this as they are. I'm attracted to you, who you are and what you are. And that like, and that brings me back to that quote that I love from The Shape of Water, which is of course, when he looks at me, the way he looks at me, he does not know what I lack or how I'm incomplete. He sees me for what I am as I am. It's like my favorite quote. I love it so much. It's so good.
It goes from, I can fix him to, can I say something without everybody getting mad?
Yeah, exactly. Like that is 100% what it is. And then there are those of us who have grown up thinking that we're the monster. So why would we not want to be with another monster? And I think that comes in from like being othered for so long. And that, you know, I think that's what you were saying, is that those of us who have felt like there's something wrong with us and have always been seen as there's something wrong. And whether it's like you know, you have a mental illness or you're a little off, you know, and you're neurodivergent, you have a physical disability, anything that you have, and you see that, and that you see that like, well, I am also a monster, and there is nothing wrong with that.
And there isn't.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. Like, and I think that's why these things are so appealing to us, and these stories are.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. It makes sense why it would be such a huge thing in the queer community.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And the nerdy, geeky community, because it's a whole group of people who've been othered.
Yeah. When you and all your friends are just different, like, flavors of neurodivergent, and you're like, oh, what is on your, like, what's the label you got this week, you know? When you see yourself as that, it's really easy to love that.
Yeah, and to have a certain, like, a modicum of power attached to it as well is also very appealing.
100%. I think you're right. Like you're taking back that power and you're taking some control in things and being like, yes, it is okay to be a little monstrous sometimes.
So that's two full episodes on why we love monsters and why we love fucking them. Mm-hmm. And I know we've already talked about like hot fish people. We've already gone through that.
We went through all the hot fish people.
But before we wrap this up and put a pretty bow on it, I'm going to give you some other monsters, and okay. I want you to tell me fuckable, not fuckable.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a real easy one first. Mothman.
Right. Oh, like, have you seen the booty on that statue? 100%.
Those abs.
He's got the booty, man. I'm into it. Let's go.
Yeah. Why you got to be that ripped?
Why?
Jersey Devil.
Oh, ooh. I'm not really into horses. I'm not a horse girl, so.
Well, I mean, you like ghost horses, but you don't like Jersey Devil horses.
No. And like, I think that the like the shrieking constantly would get a little grating. No, thanks.
Fresno Nightcrawlers.
No, they're just too cute. I just want to squish them. I just want to give them hugs. Yeah, they're too cuddly. I want to cuddle with a Fresno Nightcrawler. Not fuckable.
I would like to know how that would work. They're all legs. How would you cuddle with that?
I don't know. I would figure it out. You can cuddle with anything if you try hard enough.
Okay, well, slap that on a t-shirt. Chupacabra.
Oh, hell no. The weird goat sucking things? No, thanks. Hard pass.
Okay, those are all I could think of. Do you have any for me? Do you have any that you would like to know if I would like fuck them or not?
A Flatwoods monster.
Can you show me that one again?
Okay.
Yeah.
Monster. I hope you're ready for this. You don't even know.
No, I'm not fucking that. No.
No? What? No. They're wearing a pretty dress. Look at their pretty dress. They're all dressed up for you.
That's a big negative for me. That's a no for me, dog.
Fine.
It looks like a Pokemon.
Rude.
But
it's wearing a fancy dress.
It is worth saying that a lot of Pokemon are based off of
monsters. No. That is where I draw the
That's line. For another day, though. That's for another day.
Okay. A Puckwudgie.
I don't even know what the fuck that is. Did you make that up just now?
No, I didn't make a Puckwudgie up. Oh my goodness. It's fine. I'll find you one. What about Squonk? Do you know what a Squonk is?
I think I do.
Okay, hang on. I'll let me show you the pukwudgie first so you can make up your mind.
I no, I'm not having sex with a squonk. Are you kidding me? No. I don't like hairless cats. I don't want to have anything to do with a
Okay. And also, they
squonk.
also cry all the time. They're very sad.
Oh no, I do enough of that on my own. I don't need something else doing that.
I feel like you're just being judgy now about these poor cryptids and their I like the way these are all just have turned into would you fuck this cryptid?
Yeah, I mean, which, let's be honest, we will come back to that again,
Oh, fair
but
enough. Okay. Dragons.
no, I,
Okay.
yeah,
Just asking. Just asking.
no, which I think is kind of surprising, even to myself, but
Yeah, you're not a
yeah,
scaly? You're not into that?
not really a
Okay.
scaly, no, much more just a
Fair. Everyone's
furry,
got their things. Just
yeah.
furries. Okay. But not you, not a pukwudgie. They're furry.
No, we're
Okay.
done. We're
All right,
done.
we're done. Sorry, I ruined it. I ruined it.
I thought a sentence I never thought that I would ever want to say. I think I'm done talking about sex for a little.
I broke
You
it.
broke me. You broke me. You broke a queer man. You made a queer man not want to think about sex for a hot minute. Good job.
Do what I can.
Well, as always, we are very glad that you joined us for this. And I really, in my head, am thinking about people who have listened to both of these episodes back to back. They probably need a breather now.
Probably, most
Yeah.
definitely. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for joining us on this. I hope you learned something. I hope it was fun. Sorry for my TED talk this week. I got very excited and did a whole lot of research because I find things like this fascinating.
No, I love
And
it. I love
yeah.
it. Again, I love that you gave me an intellectual basis for being a horny monster fucker. So thank you
it's
for
I mean
that. Yeah.
there's reasons, there's science. The science is there for it. I'd also love to know from you guys out there, like what was your first monster crush? I would love to hear it. Tell me all about it. We've divulged all of ours, so.
Yeah, we have been, as you like to tell me, I am much too open sometimes.
Oh, you
So,
100% are. There's sometimes I'm like, did you really? Are you gonna leave that in? Oh, you left it in.
yeah, I left it
Okay.
in. I left it in. And as always, if you wouldn't mind rating and reviewing us, that would be awfully swell of you.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. And if you have any suggestions, we've gotten some good ones. I'm very excited to start diving into some new research from some of our listener suggestions soon. So we'll be back in another couple of weeks. And we're until then, stay safe.
Stay safe, use protection.
Use
And by use
protection.
protection, I mean have your holy water, have
Yeah.
your silver bullets, have all that.
Yeah. Make sure you're prepared for your next venture into monster fuckery.
Hear, hear.
Culture Cryptids is recorded, produced, and engineered by me, JD.
And me, Corey. You can find us on social media at Culture Cryptids on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Questions, comments, corrections, hate mail? Email us at culturecryptids@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Knox Pride.